heard about the man who dreamed about joining a monastery. He just felt that was his calling in life. He wanted to become a monk. So one day he went to the monastery and he talked to the head monk and he said, "Hey, what do I have to do to join? What's required of me?" And the head monk said, "Well, it's a little more difficult than you might be thinking." He said, it's really kind of tough. In fact, being a monk, you're only allowed to say two words every year. And the guy's like, I don't know if I can do that, but this is what I've always wanted to do, so I'll give it a try. What I do? So the head monk said, "Well, all right, head to your room. Take your Bible with you." So he sent him to his room, and all he does for a year is Bible study and prayer. And it's silent prayer at that. 12 solid months. At the end of the 12 months, the head monk called for him, and he comes, and they meet together, and the head monk says, "All right, you get two words. What are they?" He said, "Bad food." "All right, head on back to your room." He goes back to his room, and he literally spends another 12 months there in prayer and Bible study, and the head monk calls for him after another 12 months, and he comes out and says, "All right, what are your two words?" And he says, "Bed's hard." He's like, "All right, go to your room." He went back. Another 12 months passed. This is the third 12-month period. And the head monk calls him one more time and says, "All right, you get two more words. What do you say?" He goes, "I quit." The head monk says, "Doesn't surprise me. All you've done since you've been here is complain." Well, today's message was intended to have been tackling the pest of complaining. We're going to start a series next week on some of these pests that we need to deal with in our lives. And I'll hold this one till sometime where I really need a sermon and don't want to prepare or something. I don't know. But I thought today what I really wanted to do is just say thank you, look back a little bit, and look ahead a little bit more. So I do really appreciate your thoughtfulness and the kind words really throughout the week. It's been kind of a fun week leading up to this. It's funny. A few months ago, a friend of mine from Bible college sent me a message, just a really short one. Says, "Can you believe it's been 40 years? And that was the first time I really gave thought to it. It's like 40 years, but it has been. On March 10th, 1985, I was ordained into the ministry at the Christian Church of Wyandotte. 2 months later, on May the 10th, I graduated from Cincinnati Bible College. It was at a time when my home church was really struggling with their youth program, and they said, "Hey, you want to come back and work for us at your home church?" They said, we'll do it on a kind of trial basis, May, June, July, August, and if you can move the needle, we'll hire you full-time. And I stayed there for just over 4 years, and it was a fantastic 4 years of life. But I'll tell you that my first weekend on the job foretold the many twists and turns of ministry. I was graduating. I was packing all of my belongings. I was planning for my return home and was going to start church literally that weekend, 2 days later on May the 12th, as the youth minister. I was looking forward to being presented to the church as their new youth minister. But that Friday, just before graduation services, the senior pastor called. He said, "Hey, I had a family emergency. I need you to preach this weekend." Amongst his final comments was, "Don't forget it's Mother's Day." So I had 48 hours, was going to graduate, finish packing, drive back home from Cincinnati, unpack a little bit, and write a sermon really quick for Mother's Day in a church that really, really upholds Mother's Day in a big way. But the years there were really good. They were fruitful, some good things. We had a lot of funny things. I thought my mom might be here today. She's not, but she was literally the church secretary at the time. And just had a lot of fun. It was at a time when the business phones were becoming popular, the ones that had push buttons across the bottom and you could have more than one line. And I used to love to sit in my office and you pick up the one line and call the other line and put it on hold and watch my mom try to figure out what to do. But one of the really, really cool things that happened was one of the kids in the youth group, his name was Brian Bolton. Brian started a church in Lexington, Kentucky 21 years ago. This is his 21st anniversary at that church today, and they're starting a third service. The church is just kind of going crazy, and I intended to come to church two Wednesdays ago and tell Neil, "Hey, I'm thinking about driving to Lexington, would like to support Brian." I had mentioned it to Becky earlier, and she just didn't respond hardly at all. I thought she'd say, "Well, you should go," or, "No, you shouldn't go." She just didn't say anything. And I, you know, before I could mention it to Neil, he said, "Hey, we're going to do a special service this day," so I couldn't go. But Brian sent a message to play here for this. So here's Brian. Hopefully it comes. I know we're having trouble with the stuff back there. Oh no, you're way behind me. That's Ordination Sunday. I think you're past the point. I don't know. We gave Craig a week off, and he, I don't know what happened. That was my first Sunday here. Do I not have it in there, Josh? No? All right. I'll get out on Facebook. It's kind of cool, a video. He just, you know, he reminisced that there were, when we rolled in the car as a youth group together, that there were three things I could listen to: WJR Tigers Baseball, Sandy Patty, or Michael W. Smith. But he commented that he still listens to Christian music to this day, and but it's just kind of cool to have had something like that in the past, and to see what Brian and some other kids are really doing, some great things in ministry today. Well, the twists and turns were many over those 5 years, the biggest of which probably happened or just before 5 years was when someone called and said, "Hey, there's a small church up in White Lake, they like you to come preach." And I said, "Sure." I didn't even hesitate. I said, "Sure, what Sunday?" And they said, "No, not for a Sunday. They'd like you to come and preach and stay there." And I said, "Oh, let me think about that and pray about it." And sure enough, on August 6, 1989, I preached my first message at the White Lake Church of Christ, which was meeting at the time at the Highland Senior Center. Everyone showed up to welcome me, all 19 persons. And the twist and turn since then just continued. It was just a few years later when we had the opportunity to buy this building. Well, let me back up. After a couple of missed paychecks and a few conversations with the elders, it became clear I would have to work another job. And that became a bit of a crossroads for me. It wasn't what I had planned for ministry. I thought I would work full-time in a church and not have another job. So I was really missing youth ministry at the time, too. I was struggling with preaching, didn't know if I was ever going to really be a preacher, even though I had done it for a couple of years. And I really had to think about it, pray a lot about, would I go back into youth ministry? Would I maybe seek another church to preach or just stay here? And about that time, a friend of mine from Bible college sent me a passage of scripture, and he highlighted the last verse, and it had an impact. He sent me this passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 9. It says, "Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat its grapes? Who tends a flock and does not drink the milk? Do I say this merely on human authority? Doesn't the law say the same thing? For it's written in the law of Moses, 'Do not muzzle an ox while it's treading out the grain.' Is it about oxen that God's concerned? Surely he says this for us, doesn't he? Yes, this was written for us. Because whoever plows and threshes should be able to do so in the hope of sharing in the harvest. If we have sown spiritual seed among you, is it too much if we reap a material harvest for you?" Paul's writing this because the church was not paying him for his service. And he was saying, "Hey, I have the right as an apostle. You should probably pay me." And he says, "If others have the right of support from you, shouldn't we have it all the more? But we did not use this right." And here's what my friend highlighted. "On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ." And he put a little note at the bottom. He goes, "Keep preaching the gospel of Christ." And it was in that spirit, and since 1994, that I've been a bivocational preacher. I spent a number of years as a substitute teacher, and then the past 26 years working for a bank. But in each of those positions, I've been allowed to sometimes quietly and sometimes very overtly share Christ with others. My earliest memory of that was at Wald Lake High School. I was asked to teach an algebra class for ninth graders for an entire semester. That was just happenstance. I was teaching it on an occasion, and I was actually at the board, unlike most substitute teachers, trying to demonstrate how to do a problem, when the principal peeked his head in the door and said, "Do you understand how to do this?" I said, I think so, yeah. He said, "We can't find a substitute, and the teacher's going to be out for the semester. Can you take the class?" Just like that. And I went back every day, and I taught that class. But there was a kid in that class whose singular desire in life was to annoy me. His name was Justin Barrett. And Justin just, every day it was something new, and I'd call his parents, and I'd keep him after school, and I'd send him to the principal's office, send him in the hallway, and I just decided, what he needs more than anything else is Jesus. And I tried to tell him about Christ. I tried to tell him about my life a little bit. I tried to share a little bit of that with him. And slowly he began to start asking questions. He went with our church to Christ in Youth Conference at the end of the school year and gave his life to Christ, was baptized. We saw a picture of that earlier in the show. But I've been fortunate and blessed because of that unique circumstance to reach people that I don't know if otherwise would have been reached by anyone. God has a plan, and he executes it so well. The next crazy twist came when we moved into this building. We had to try and get all the paperwork together. We found a bank that would give us a mortgage, amazingly, but we had all kinds of corporate paper stuff to pull together, and I found out that no one had been filing corporate paperwork on behalf of the church since the mid-1980s. It was now late 1990s, with the state senator sitting in the back row here. And it turned out that it was a lot easier and a lot quicker to dissolve that old organization and just create a new one, way easier. And that's what we did. And the White Lake Church of Christ really became Tri-County Christian Church. And I learned at that time how finicky some people can be. People literally said, "If you rename the church, I'm not coming back." And I said, "It's still Jesus. It's still the same people. It's, but not coming back." You know, just one of those twists and turns of ministry. You know, the White Lake Church of Christ was a wonderful jewel in God's eyes, but it meant nothing to the state of Michigan at the time, and we had to fix that. That was how we came about. The most meaningful twist probably, though, came when someone visited our church in 2006. She got my attention. I called her up, asked her out for dinner, and she very politely said no. At first, but we were married the following summer, and Becky's been my partner in ministry for now these 20 years. And she doesn't like being up in front nearly as much as I do, but I'll just say this. She's done more for this church than you'll ever know. Anyone here will ever know, and she supported me in everything I've done all of these years. The times away, the times in hospitals, the times in homes, the times in Bible studies, it's just been fantastic. This morning she came in, she said, "Oh, someone brought flowers in, that's nice." I said, "Well, I didn't tell her, but I brought them." So what I could say, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. If you would have asked me 40 years ago if this is where I would be today, there's no way I would have ever imagined it, but God has blessed the journey. Some wonderful friendship has been made. I'm so proud of some of the things our church has done. This church is a loving church to people in it and outside of it, and you guys have just been amazing when it comes to what I'll just call real ministry. One of the things I'm particularly proud of is the contributions we've made to missions and benevolence organizations over the years. You've heard me talk about this from time to time. I couldn't find paperwork all the way back to 1989, but I found it pretty far back. And my best guess is that this church has given about $300,000 and $325,000 to mission and benevolent causes. Not bad for a church that operates on about a $50,000 a year budget over that time span. That's about 20% of everything that we've collected in offering to help someone else outside of this church to take the gospel to somewhere else that we're not personally going to. We have shared Jesus with others. We've seen souls won to Christ. We've said, "See you later," to some who've preceded us on their journey to heaven. We've prayed over the sick. We have comforted the grieving. We've rejoiced with those who have rejoiced. And we have stuck like glue to the gospel message. And I think together we just have a lot to be proud of. But I wanted to really take a few minutes this morning and more so look forward. Most of my life I've been pretty sheltered. I've only come to realize this the last few years. The United States of America is a fantastic place to live, to grow up, to call home. But there's different cultures within this country that I just didn't have contact with. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew they were out there. But the level of pain with what some people live is beyond anything I really ever realized until just really a couple years ago. The pressure to conform to a very sinful and dark way of life is way greater than I ever understood, having grown up in a Christian home and surrounded by Christians most of my life. The devastation of life behind jail bars. The heartbreak of drug and alcohol addiction. The struggle to move ahead in an economy that is becoming increasingly difficult for the younger generation. And so much more. There's a subculture out there that just is nothing I knew about between homelessness and crime and single parent households and just so many folks living in absolute poverty. But as a church, we have an answer. As a church, we offer hope. We offer security. We offer peace. We offer salvation. We offer eternity. We just have to go out and find those folks, or we have to be deliberate about not overlooking those folks. And that's become really easy for us and so many other Christians to do. In last week's message, I said I believe that one of the biggest sins of the modern day church is that we have elevated the sanctification of the saints above the salvation of non-believers. In other words, I think we've done a really fantastic job of trying to help grow each other in Jesus, to support one another, to lift up one another, but at the complete expense at times of a world that's lost without Jesus Christ. We have to do a better job at reaching into darker cultures and going into places we'd probably rather ignore to help people learn about Jesus Christ. One of the other things I said last week is that I believe that radically loving others is the way we will make a radical difference. So we have to literally be serious about seeking out ways to show kindness and love and good news of Jesus to others. A couple of things I really hope to do over the next decade, which will most certainly be my last in ministry, is creating a consortium of small churches to work together for the common good. I think small ministry is still the heartbeat of the American church, the Christian church. But it's hard for us to do a lot as a small church. But when you pull 5 or 10 or 15 small churches together, I think there creates power. We did it downriver as a youth minister, and I think we can do it again. Josh Voss has already started reaching out to some of these churches on a different level. But I think we could do a lot. We could just explode what we're doing now if we work together in a more concerted effort with other churches. So that's one of the things I want to do. I'd like to see our first combined effort be a community-wide Good Friday service on April 3rd of next year. So I've started reaching out already to church just to see if we can pull something like that together. I want to challenge our men's group to go as Jesus sent his disciples 2 by 2 on some sort of regular calling visitation. My home church did this quite effectively. We called it the Christian Goodfellows. The gospel can be shared on live stream. It can be put on bulletin boards. It can be put on YouTube. It can be put on placards and put in the mail. But the greatest method by far in reaching people for Christ has always been one-on-one, in-person contact. And we've got to figure out a way to do that. I'd like to challenge our ladies' group to set aside one night a month for visiting, maybe the home of someone who needs assistance, maybe a senior center, maybe a retirement home, maybe someone who hasn't been to church for a while that could easily become forgotten if we don't reach out. But the kind of an in-person ministry and outreach that can make the difference in the life of another. I'd like to challenge everyone here to grow deeper in faith by attending Bible study. I'm hoping next year to have at least two more in-home groups. In the meantime, we still have Sunday school at 9 a.m. We still have midweek Bible study on Wednesday nights at 6:30 every week. But the pathway to deepening faith is in God's Word. Romans chapter 1, verse 10 says, "So then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God." There's no substitute for it. We have to rekindle our youth group program, and that's something you know I've been working on. We'll just keep working about it. Sometime next year, I'm planning a series of messages on stories that are easily overlooked in the Bible. I'm hoping to find 7 or 8 stories that I've never preached on ever in 40 years and bring them to life. And one of them is about a guy named Ehud. He was a left-handed judge who saved Israel from Eglon the Moabite. Anyone know this story? You're a preacher. Mark, I should have known Mark would. So there's a couple, but not many of you. So I want to talk about this left-handed judge. Eglon was specifically mentioned in the Bible as being left-handed, making him different from the majority of people in his day. And God used that difference in a remarkable way to give him an opportunity he wouldn't have otherwise had and to save his people. I'm not going to give away the whole story, right? Because I want you to come back that Sunday. You can go home and look it up in Judges if you want. But I want to say this to you today as Christians. We are supposed to look different than the world. That'll be kind of the moral of the story. We're supposed to look different than the rest of the world. Years ago, early in my ministry, I was leading a youth group, and one of the high school students, a nice young man by name of Kevin, came up to me and said, "Hey, I don't have a dad, so can I ask you a question since you're kind of old?" I was 24 or 25 at the time. And I said, "Sure, you can." He went on to explain and tell me all about his friend group. It was an amazing friend group. They had been tight. They had been playing football together since they were in elementary school. He talked about third and fourth grade. They were always around each other. They were an essential part of each other's lives. They did tons of stuff together. He said they knew everything. He knew everything about these boys, and they knew everything about him. And they really had become the high school football team at that time. I mean, they had just grown up in it and kept going. But he said a couple of the people in that group began doing things that were making him really uncomfortable, behaviors that he knew deep down were wrong, behaviors that I would describe as Satan's workshop for teenagers. And this particular friend had invited him to start participating in those things. He said most of his friends had already joined in. Others weren't far behind. And I listened as he shared this story, and he was even starting to become emotional because this group of friends really meant a lot to him. But with all of the maturity in the world, this young man looked up and said, "I feel like I can't follow my friends and follow Jesus." And he said, "I know which one I need to choose, but I feel like I'm going to lose literally everything in the process," and he asked me what to do. It's probably one of the most challenging questions I've been asked over the years, honestly. I knew these friends were really important to him. And I did my best at that moment to very gently explain that there will be a lot of times in our lives that we will have to leave something in order to follow Jesus. Even though it can be difficult in that moment to question whether or not Jesus is worth it, Jesus is the kind of friend, I told him, that will never lead him or me down the wrong path. Never. He'll never do it to us. We talked a lot. I gave him a whole lot to process. I was hoping he would leave, think about it, pray about it over the next few days. The conversation came to an end, and he started walking toward the door. As he got to the door, he turned around. He looked back to me, and before he left, he said, "I think he's worth it." I said, "Me too. Me too." Not only did the 17-year-old boy stand firm in his faith in Jesus, distance himself from a group of bad influences, but two of his friends from that group actually started coming with him to church. One of them ended up giving his life to Christ, being baptized, all because of what he learned about Jesus from his friend Kevin. And it got me thinking, if God can do that through a high school boy who's brave enough to look a little different than the rest of his friend group, imagine what he can do through you. Imagine what he can do through me. I love you enough today to tell you this truth. There will be very few times in your life when you will be able to follow this world and follow Jesus too. Because just speaking from my own personal experience, these two things are almost always headed in opposite directions. And that's why Paul told us, do not be conformed to this world. He said, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is his good, his pleasing, and his perfect will. In other words, there's going to be times, there'll be many times, when you and I will be forced to pick a side. And I'll warn you, the side that Jesus is on is usually not the most popular side. And it will be tough. And through his perfection, though, when you choose his side, others will see him in you, and they'll see that you are different, and they'll see that his love has made you different, and they will eventually see that his love is by far better than anything this world offers. Randy, are you happy preaching at a small church? Yeah. God's blessed. He's blessed this ministry in so many ways, and yet I know there can be more. So I just challenge you, keep coming, keep staying faithful, help this church do the same as what it's been doing, and maybe a little bit more of it. A few of us have taken the gospel message to a few and more. More of us can take the gospel message even further. I think the church is worth it. I think the Lord's church is worth it. And I know that Jesus is worth it.